and ready to stuff my face. So bring on the turkey, potatoes, casserole dishes, cause I ain't messing around with them buttoned up britches. You got them skinny jeans on, girl, I feel sorry.
Yo, this is the Fat King Madzal saying, you're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Ha!
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we've got all sorts of sounds and stories for you today. We'll hear about how environmentalists 40 years ago created New York's bottle bill and how they now want to update it. Mark Dunley from WOOC talks with Ryan Thorson Carson of NYPERG about adding uncarbonated beverages, wine, and liquors to the bottle bill and raising the deposit to a dime. That's the proposal in Albany this year. We'll also hear the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate, and we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service. On the WGXC Morning Show, it all begins after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz and Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC local news update. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra. Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Copake town officials have voted to allow retail cannabis dispensaries and are considering opting out of on-site consumption locations. The town board held a public forum prior to its regular monthly meeting November 11th, and residents offered their opinions on the potential benefits of retail cannabis sales. Quote, I had the sense here that clearly everybody who came to this meeting or sent us something was in favor of us proceeding, unquote, Town Supervisor Jeannie Mettler said. Quote, I do think when people are talking about allowing the sale of cannabis, what I believe they're saying is that they want to allow dispensaries, unquote. New York cannabis law allows for any village, town, or city to create a local law opting out from allowing retail cannabis dispensaries and or on-site consumption sites within its jurisdiction. Any municipality that creates a local law opting out has the ability to opt back in at any time. Numerous Copake residents spoke in favor of allowing retail sales at the meeting. When it was time for the vote, the board broke the opt-out in decision into two parts, first voting on opting out of dispensaries and then making the decision on opting out of consumption sites. The motion on the dispensaries question passed with 3 votes in favor, 1 against, and 1 abstention. The motion on consumption sites will be decided in December. State law allows municipalities to opt out of allowing adult-use cannabis retail dispensaries or on-site consumption licenses from locating within their boundaries, but they cannot opt out of adult-use legalization. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com. Bethany Bump is reporting for the Times Union. A new report from the Community Service Society has found that some hospital systems in New York commonly garnish wages and place liens on the real property of patients with back medical debt. While most hospitals in the state do not report taking such action, the practice is common among some hospital systems that sue for back-owed debt and win. At the top of that list is St. Peter's Health Partners in Albany, followed by Northwell Health and Albany Med, of which Columbia Memorial Health is associated. The report is based on data collected in 2017 and 2018, the most recent available. The practice impacts thousands of New Yorkers a year. The median outstanding debt that triggers the lawsuits is $1,900, according to CSS. When a lien is filed on a person's home, they generally cannot sell the property without paying off the debt. It can also prevent them from refinancing or obtaining additional loans, such as a home equity loan. CSS found that the practice of taking liens out on patients' homes is most widespread among hospitals in just 15 counties, including Albany, Dutchess, Rensselaer, Schenectady, and Ulster counties. Albany Medical Center and its affiliates filed liens on the homes of 482 patients in 2017 and 2018. Nathan Litterer Hospital in Gloversville filed 358 liens, and Ellis Hospital in Schenectady filed 230, the report shows. Not long after the CSS report was released, state lawmakers introduced a bill that would prevent hospitals from this practice. The measure proposed by State Senator Gustavo Rivero and Assemblymember Richard Gottfried would bar New York hospitals from placing liens or from garnishing wages when they win court judgments in medical debt collection cases. The bill had 16 co-sponsors as of last week, including Senate Finance Committee Chair Liz Krueger. Read more about the story in the Times Union. And Patricia R. Doxey is reporting in the Daily Freeman that Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan and the union that represents corrections officers and civilian employees at the county sheriff's office have reached an agreement that would give employees a pay increase over the next 5 years. The pact between the county and the Ulster County Sheriff's Employee Association now goes to the county legislature for approval. If okayed by the Laws and Rules and Ways and Means Committees, it will go to the full legislature on November 16th. Quote, I am proud that we have reached this agreement with UCSEA, one of the largest labor unions in county government, unquote, Ryan said in a statement November 12th. Quote, this new contract recognizes the hard work of our employees, especially given the challenges that they have faced since the outbreak of COVID-19, unquote. As proposed, the contract would run from January 1, 2020 to December 31, 2024. Employees would receive a 3.5% increase in base salary retroactive to December 31, 2020 and April 1, 2021, plus a 2% increase in base salary and more annually from 2022 to 2024. The settlement package will cost county taxpayers $2.12 million over the 5-year agreement. The Ulster County Sheriff's Association is the second largest employee union in the county, second only to the Civil Service Employees Association, or CSEA. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Steve Roach spent the waning days of 2014 in the studio, crafting a piece of ambient music. we'll hear his creation on the next Deep Threes. Plus music from Ciolina, Trokai, Carlo Bley, and Robert Spring. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday will be partly sunny with a high of just 44. And Sunday night, rain and snow is possible before 4 a.m. and with a low around 32 and 80% chance of precipitation Sunday night. Monday, again, there's a chance of rain or snow showers in the morning. Then it turns partly sunny with a high of 42 and a low around 31 Monday night. Tuesday should be mostly sunny with a high of 42 and a low around 30. And then it warms up a little on Wednesday with a high of 52 and a low around 42 forecast. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dan Bunny of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to art and discussion. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to up and down. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to purple and green. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to the planet. Listen to ladies and dummies. Listen to books. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to bath time and nap time. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas and listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Listen to clouds and leaves, bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio WGXC.
Come and get your love. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson. And I'm usually joined by some of my young friends, Georgia, Jada, Jay, Fatia, Mashuda, Amelia. And every week we get together and we talk about books. Books that we love, books that we hate, and other bookish things. And this week, no one was available to do the show with me. So it's just me and you, radio listeners, today. And since November is American Indian and Native Alaskan Heritage Month, I thought we could celebrate that by talking about some books for young readers that are written by Native writers and about Native youth. And so I'm going to talk about some that I've read and some that I want to read. And I'm going to read the descriptions. I'll talk about some middle grade titles and then some books meant for teens. So first up, we have a series opener, Jojo McCoon's The Used to Be Best Friend by Don Quigley, with illustrations by Tara Audibert. And this is an early chapter book series that is probably for elementary age students, like ages 6 to 10 maybe. I still loved it as an adult, so, you know, who knows. But it's very sweet. I think fans of Ramona Quimby series, Junie B. Jones, Clementine, you know, spunky female leads will love this. So here's the description. Hello, Buzhu. Meet Jojo McCoon's, a spunky young Ojibwe girl who loves who she is. Jojo McCoon's Azur is a spirited 7-year-old who moves through the world a little differently than anyone else on her Ojibwe reservation. It always seems like her mom, her kokum, grandma, and her teacher have a lot to learn about how good Jojo is at cleaning up, what makes a good rhyme, and what it means to be friendly. Even though Jojo loves her number one best friend, Mimi, who is a cat, she's worried that she needs to figure out how to make more friends, because Fern, her best friend at school, may not want to be friends anymore. So this is a really fun, funny, like laugh out loud funny, but also, you know, has storylines that have meaning and like can touch you in a way or bring you back. I guess if you're at that age, maybe not bring you back, just that you could relate to. But it's a great series. Highly suggest it. The second book is not out yet, but will be coming out in May of 2022. But I think one of the nice things about this story is once you hit middle grade and young adult, a lot of the books that you'll find about American Indian youth are very serious and touch on sort of the hardships of both history and present, and in some cases into looking into the future of American Indian communities and individuals. And this one was just a very light, fun read, so I really appreciated that, although I also appreciate the serious topics as well, as I will share some of those in a moment. But yeah, this was a great series, very cute illustrations. I think it'll be really popular with young readers. So that's Jojo McCoon's The Used to Be Best Friend by Don Quigley. Next up, I have another book that's the first in a series. This one is a trilogy by Tim Tingle. And this series is more for middle school readers, probably grades 4 to 7, 4 to 8. And this book is historic fiction. The first book in the series is called How I Became a Ghost, and I will read the description for this. Told in the words of Isaac, a Choctaw boy who does not survive the Trail of Tears, How I Became a Ghost is a tale of innocence and resilience in the face of tragedy. From the book's opening line, maybe you have never read a book written by a ghost before, the reader is put on notice that this is no normal book. Isaac leads a remarkable foursome of Choctaw comrades, a tough-minded teenage girl, a shape-shifting panther boy, a lovable 5-year-old ghost who only wants her mom and dad to be happy, and Isaac's talking dog, Jumper. The The first in a trilogy, How I Became a Ghost, thinly disguises an important and oft overlooked piece of history. And this is just a really great story, great characters. I think the sort of fantastical element of it or spiritual element of it makes it perhaps more inviting or exciting of a historical read than some books are for young people. And so I think a lot of readers would find something to love in this book. I have not read the rest of the trilogy. Every year I say I'm going to read it and then I don't get around to it. So maybe this will be the year, but I'm not promising anything because I have failed to finish the series. But it's not for not loving the first book because I love this book. So that's How I Became a Ghost by Tim Tingle. And next up for middle grade readers again, I want to highlight a newer title that came out earlier this year. That is a collection of stories called Ancestor Approved Intertribal Stories for Kids, and it was edited by Cynthia Leetich Smith. And here is the description. A collection of intersecting stories set at a powwow that bursts with hope, joy, resilience, the strength of community, and Native pride. In a high school gym full of color and song, Native families from nations within the borders of the U.S. and Canada dance, sell beadwork and books, and celebrate friendship and heritage. They are the heroes of their own stories. Featured contributors include Joseph Bruchak, Art Colson, Christine Day, Eric Gansworth, Don Quigley, Carol Lindstrom, Rebecca Roanhorse, David A. Robertson, Andrea L. Rogers, Kim Rogers, Cynthia Leetich Smith, Monique Gray Smith, Tracy Sorrell, Tim Tingle, Erica T. Worth, and Brian Young. So you may notice a few familiar names in there, Don Quigley and Tim Tingle, whose books I just mentioned. So they each have stories in here, but this just sounds like a really great collection of stories. I like how it all centers around a powwow, but that each character has their own story, so you get to know all of these different people that make up a community at an event. So I'm really looking forward to this. I love several of these authors and have read their work, and I'm going to listen to the audiobook for this one, so I'm looking forward to that. So that is Ancestor Approved, Intertribal Stories for Kids, edited by Cynthia Leetich Smith. So moving into the YA section, Books for Teens, this is another collection of not just stories, but of essays and poems and artwork and photography. And it's called Hashtag Not Your Princess, Voices of Native American Women. It's edited by Lisa Charlieboy and Mary Beth Leatherdale. And here's the description. Whether looking back to a troubled past or welcoming a hopeful future, the powerful voices of Indigenous women across North America resound in this book. In the same style as the best-selling Dreaming in Indian, which is also a great book, Hashtag Not Your Princess presents an eclectic collection of poems, essays, interviews, and art that combine to express the experience of being a Native woman. Stories of abuse, humiliation, and stereotyping are countered by the voices of passionate women making themselves heard and demanding change. Sometimes angry, often reflective, but always strong, the women in this book will give teen readers insight into the lives of women who, for so long, have been virtually invisible. I love the format of this book because it gives you lots of different perspectives, both different topics, different backgrounds, different communities, different experiences, but also expressed in different ways. So some people express themselves through poetry or song, through art, through writing. So it's a really interesting way of getting a lot of different perspectives in one book. And I think it's very eye-catching and will appeal to a lot of teen readers. So I highly suggest checking that one out and also Dreaming in Indian. But this one was Hashtag Not Your Princess, Voices of Native American Women, edited by Lisa Charlieboy and Mary Beth Leatherdale. And next up we have The Marrow Thieves, Book 1, by Cherie Dimeline. And this is a dystopian book for teens. And here's the description. In a futuristic world ravaged by global warming, people have lost the ability to dream, and the dreamlessness has led to widespread madness. The only people still able to dream are North America's indigenous people, and it is their marrow that holds the cure for the rest of the world. But getting the marrow and dreams means death for the unwilling donors. Driven to flight, a 15-year-old and his companions struggle for survival, a attempt to reunite with loved ones and take refuge from the recruiters, who seek them out to bring them to the marrow-stealing factories. So this one's a very different book from the others that I've talked about today, in that it's a future, sort of horrifying future vision, but it's made extra horrifying by the fact that it's connected to the history of how Indigenous people were treated in this country. So tying back to residential schools and other mistreatment of Indigenous people throughout our history of colonization. I thought this was a really great book. I'm perhaps less into dystopian fiction these days than I once was. So I'm not sure if I'm going to read more of the series, but I am interested in reading more from Cherie Dimeline. She also writes books for adults as well. I can't remember if she has any books for kids out yet, for younger kids, but this was The Marrow Thieves by Cherie Dimeline, and the second book in the series is out. Actually, just came out last month in October, and it is called Hunting by Stars. And the last book I wanted to feature today is a book that I'm looking forward to reading very soon. It's called Eletsoe by Darcy Little Badger, who actually has a more recent book out, coming out this month, that I'm also interested in reading, but I decided to start with Eletsoe, which was her debut novel, and came highly suggested. And so here is the description for this book. Imagine an America very similar to our own. It's got homework, best friends, and pistachio ice cream. There are some differences. This America has been shaped dramatically by the magic, monsters, knowledge, and legends of its peoples, those Indigenous and those not. Some of these forces are charmingly everyday, like the ability to make an orb of light appear or travel across the world through rings of fungi, but other forces are less charming and should never see the light of day. Eletsoe lives in this slightly stranger America. She can raise the ghosts of dead animals, a skill passed down through generations of her Lipan Apache family. Her beloved cousin has just been murdered in a town that wants no prying eyes, but she is going to do more than pry. The picture-perfect facade of Willoughby masks gruesome secrets, and she will rely on her wits, skills, and friends to tear off the mask and protect her family. So I love the, again, sort of fantastical element to this book. I like how it's a world similar to ours, but with slight differences. And I love a good mystery. And it's also a beautiful book. I have this in a physical copy. Our radio listeners might know I listen to a lot of audiobooks, but this one I bought the physical copy. And it has beautiful cover art. And then it has illustrations throughout. It's not I wouldn't say it's an illustrated book, but it has, like, at the start of each chapter, there's an illustration, and they're very beautiful. And the illustrations are by Ravina Kai. So that's Eletsoe by Darcy Little Badger. And the newer book by Darcy Little Badger, which will be coming out this month, is called A Snake Falls to Earth. And it was long listed for the National Book Award. So definitely an author to keep our eyes on. And before we wrap it up for today, I wanted to share one other project, which is not meant for young readers, but I'm sure there's work within it that is accessible for young readers. But our U.S. Poet Laureate, Joy Harjo, who is an acclaimed poet and a member of the Muskogee Nation, for her project as the Poet Laureate, she created this project called Living Nations, Living Words, which you can find online. And I will read the description that she has for it, but I also encourage you to check it out yourself. Here's the description. As the first Native U.S. Poet Laureate, I decided that my signature project should introduce the country to the many Native poets who live in these lands. Our communities innately shared and share poetry from before the founding of the United States to the present. We understand poetry to be a living language, whether it is in our tribal languages or in English or another language. We use poetry to mark transformations, as in love letters, elegies, or epithalamium. Poetry can be useful for praise and even to help deter a storm. Or poetry is a tool to uncover the miraculous in the ordinary. We are intimately involved in our communities, which may be on our reservations or in the cities, and often both. We are like everyone else. Some of us stay rooted. Others travel and even live internationally. This holds true for our individual approaches to the art of poetry. The Living Nations Living Words Project features a sampling of work by 47 Native Nations poets through an interactive ArcGIS story map and a newly developed Library of Congress audio collection. Keep in mind that each of the featured poets has many poetry ancestors, as well as young poets who have or will follow in their footsteps. There are connections between all of the poets in Living Nations Living Words, and connecting influences between these poets and many, many other Native poets who do not appear here, and many, many American and world poets from the present and generations before. As you explore, you too will be connected. And so it's a very interesting collection. There is a companion anthology that you can read if you prefer to read the written word. But there's also this interactive map where you can look at a map and click on where you would like to read a poem from. So you can go up to Alaska and find Kari Ayagaduk Ojanen from King Island, Alaska, or even farther up north. We've got Kathy Tagnak Rexford. You can go to Comanche County, Oklahoma, and read poems by Sai Hoawa. Or you can go over to Mojave Valley, Arizona, and read poems by Natalie Diaz. Up in St. Regis Mohawk Indian Nation, New York, we have Alex Jacobs. And so you learn a little bit about the poet, and you can listen to them read the poem, as well as some commentary on the poem. And you can read the poem. So it's just a really interesting way to explore our country and get introduced to some Native poets that maybe you haven't read before. And so the best way to get to that is if you look up Joy Harjo or Living Nations Living Words Library of Congress, and you can get to the site that way and explore. It's a great site. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up for today. But I hope everyone out there listening has a great week with lots of quality reading time. Be back next week to talk about some more books with my youth co-hosts. Until then, happy reading.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from our Hudson studio from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Jazz Disturbance, 90.7 degrees, hot.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
That was Anne In from sound artist Pamela Z from her 2021 album Echolocation. All right, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think it was Seth Meyers, I'm not sure which one of the late night comedians made one quick offhand joke about the vaccinated trying to attempt to get unvaccinated. And I have been obsessed with the idea since. I've been wondering why it's not already a thing. How is it possible in the year 2021, the late in the year 2021, that people aren't out protesting at their local departments of health to get unvaccinated? Well, my dreams have come true. NBC News reports.
about the TikTok video with hundreds of thousands of reviews from Dr. Kerry Madjev, explaining the ingredients in a bath to unvaccinate. You're supposed to bathe in baking soda and Epsom salts, she falsely claims. You know, which people do all the time. And there's never been a trace of this unvaccinates you before. But now, in the year of 2021, Epsom salts are radiation detox. The story goes on. Bentonite clay will reportedly add a, quote, major pull of poison, unquote. That's based on the mistaken idea that anti-vaccine communities, that toxins can be removed from the body with certain therapies. She then recommends adding a cup of borax, a cleaning agent that's been banned as a food additive by the Food and Drug Administration. And the reason to add the borax is, quote, to take the nanotechnologies out of you. So it gets the 5G out of you, the borax. If you want to remove the 5G from your system, if you're carrying your cell phone too close to your pocket, you want a cup of borax in a detox bath. Don't drink it, though. The FDA says it will kill you. But the experts, they say the bath won't work. You can't get unvaccinated. Quote, once you're injected, the life-saving vaccination process has already begun. You can't unring a bell. It's just not physically possible, unquote, said Angela Rasmussen, a virologist and adjunct professor at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. Of course, long before COVID, anti-vaxxers have been taking detox remedies and regimens to rid their bodies of the stuff that's protecting them from chickenpox and rabies and the boogie-woogie flu. Many autistic children have been put in baths of varying weirdness to pull the alleged heavy metal poisoning of vaccines out of their bodies. This is, of course, not true. Of course, it goes back in history to the days of cupping. While the virologist Rasmussen says, once you get your vaccine for COVID-19, quote, the transaction process for the mRNA vaccine is fairly quick. Basically, by the time you get out to your car, sorry, the magic has already started, unquote, she said. And the disinformation scientists are also weighing in on the issue. Quote, this illustrates how these anti-vaccine communities are shifting and pushing these claims toward vaccinated people. Unquote, said Ciarán O'Connor, a disinformation researcher for the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, an anti-extremism nonprofit based in London. TikTok has taken down the video, but others have, of course, popped up. We'll be right back. Now on the phone with us is Columbia County's Director of Public Health, Jack Mabb, to update us on what's going on with COVID-19 in Columbia County. And we've got news about booster shots and vaccines for children that are now approved and ready to be going out this week. Is that true?
Well, we are going to be doing our shots. We've already set up our links and established it with the schools. We're going to go in the schools, and that's the week of the 15th. So on the 15th, we're doing Hudson and Taconic Hills. We have two teams going out. Hudson's going to be 4 to 7. Taconic Hills is 3 to 6. On the 16th, we have Germantown 4 to 7, New Lebanon also 4 to 7. And on the 17th, Wednesday the 17th, we're at the Chatham Firehouse. We're predominantly going to be doing Ichabod and Chatham students. That's from 3 to 6. On the other hand, because it's a public site, parents who can't get to one of the other locations on the 15th or 16th could sign up and register for Chatham. So the way it's working right now is that the school districts are getting out the links to parents via text and emails. Some of them may be doing robocalls. The Chatham Firehouse is open. The link is open, so parents can sign up for that. Now they can go right on our website and sign up for that one.
And do parents need to do anything? Is there permission slips being sent home, or how does that all work?
Well, the first time with the 12 to 18s, we sent out the permission slips. It got a little cumbersome. When parents go on the link is going out from the school district, so Hudson's going to send out the Hudson link. When they register their child, there's a consent built into the registration. So they're granting their consent. Now, we will take walk-ins, and if they do walk in, they're going to obviously have to fill out paperwork, and including the consent when they come to the site.
Now, has Big Bird's approval of the vaccine, is that the controversy about that, has that spilled down to Columbia County?
I haven't heard anybody basically say anything about it. Our anticipation is that if we look at national poll numbers, something like 27% of the parents out there say they'll get their kids vaccinated right away. And I think a lot of those parents are going to pharmacies now, because pharmacies are now handing it out. We have just shy of 3,000 students in Columbia County who are eligible to get this vaccine. And if we do hit the 27% mark, we're up around 900 kids. So we're ready for that if that happens. Our anticipation is that there's probably been a slew of kids that have already gone to pharmacies, and we'll be doing that this week. So I would love to see better numbers than that, but I don't know about Big Bird endorsing or not, but, you know, whether or not that.
I guess there's like three types of people getting shots. The people that rush right away to get things, the people that sort of get it when it's convenient, and then the people that are resistant. And so you're hearing, I guess, that the first group is getting their young people the shot right away.
Yeah, I think those are the folks who are getting out. Interestingly enough, I looked at the numbers last week on the 12 to 18, and we did about 18% of the population when we did our school pods, and that number has crept up to close to 70. So just what you just described, there was an initial rush of parents who said, we're going to do it right now, let's get it done, and then that third that hung back, and that I think it's obviously better than a third that, you know, is taken, has moved on.